Are you in a season of waiting when it comes to your money, where you know some big change is coming in the near future, but it's not there yet? What do you do in the meantime? What do you do while you're waiting? Should you try to grow the gap between your income and expenses, or should you just be okay with a different timeline than you maybe thought initially? Alexandria is a single mom and a teacher's aide getting her teaching degree. In today's episode, we talk about when to be okay with saving and when to be okay with spending. Today on the Debt-Free Mom podcast, we have Alexandria, who is here to talk about growing the gap between her income and expenses while in school and being a single parent. So Alexandria, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So one thing we were chatting right before I pressed record was that you wanted to share your story so that other single parents who might feel like they're the only ones experiencing the challenges that they have are not alone, that they know that there's other people out there doing a similar thing. So in a couple sentences, can you just give us what's your current life situation? Where with your career, with your kid, like where are you at?
So I'm finishing school to be a teacher. I have a special needs son who takes a lot of my time and energy. We live with family, which is a thing. As for like the number one question that usually comes after that is how involved is his dad? There's very little involvement and no payment.
Has there ever been, like, has that come and gone or has that never been a thing?
Never been a thing.
Okay. So you're in school, working, one child and live with family. What are your goals for your money? What are you working towards?
So I have my starter emergency fund, which is 1 month of expenses, which is $500. I would like to make that bigger. Obviously, I know that's not like anywhere near it should be. My dream has always been a home. Mm-hmm. That does not seem possible right now in this economy, but those are kind of like the two big goals I've been focusing on since becoming debt-free.
How much longer are you going to be in school before you could then seek a teaching job?
A year and a half-ish.
So in like the middle of a school year is when you will finish your schooling. Okay. Yeah. So I know you've said that you really want to grow the gap between your income and expenses and be able to buy a home or even rent a home, move out. In such a short window of time, the fact that you're done with school a year and a half from now, I also finished a degree kind of in the middle of a school year. And I was surprised by how many teaching jobs were actually available in the middle of a school year, because I know sometimes that can be a hesitation for teachers of like, oh, if I graduate in December, I'm not going to be able to get a full-time job until next August, which is really far away. So if like, let's say like best case scenario, if you were able to get a full-time teaching job, it would be January of 2026 after you were graduated. That's really, I know it feels far away, but that's really, really not that far away in terms of when something is less than 2 years away from happening, whether it's drastically being able to increase your income or some change to a move or, you know, another child or whatever people might have, whatever big changes people might have, it is okay to just wait until that big change happens, to not feel like you have to save up a full down payment for a house, for example, within the next year and a half while you're also juggling single parenting and school and your own job. That's a lot of big things on your plate at the same time. And I would take an educated guess that the speed at which you would be able to make some of those goals happen once you are working full time will feel light years faster than what's happening right now. So you said you want to grow the gap between your income and expenses. Do you currently have a positive gap between your income and expenses, even if it's very narrow?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very narrow.
Yes. Yeah. But you're not going into the hole, right? Like you're not spending more than you make, because that would be a more, you know, we need to grow that gap immediately. You do have a gap between your income and expenses. And I think something really important to balance is that we want to balance the way our life feels with the progress of our money goals. So it's actually not an ideal goal to say, I'm going to strip everything fun out of my life and out of my son's life in order to meet my savings goal, right? You're pointing at yourself. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, because I've been doing that.
Okay. So maybe what you need to hear from me is not some creative way to grow the gap between your income and expenses, but to say the gap between your income and expenses is fine, especially given the totality of your circumstances, right? Like when we take all of the different pieces in play, the fact that you're in school while parenting, while working means that we actually probably need to add some things into your budget and make sure that you can go out to eat once a week while you're trying to get your homework done and your school done. Make sure that you can, you know, take your son somewhere fun that he likes to go, you know, whatever frequency, once a pay period or something, because it can be easy to compare our timelines to someone else's timeline and think, oh, I should be doing this faster. I should be making progress faster. But the fact that you have a pretty big career shift that can come within a year and a half, and at that point, the ability to save will be so much faster that it's okay to wait. Like, it's okay to be like, if we are making all of our payments and we have a roof over our heads, we're going to add a little bit of fun into the budget to be able to get to that year and a half when you're graduating, and then celebrate then, you know, and then start to grow. Obviously, if that's what you've been doing, you're very savings minded. You value savings and you want to be doing that. And so you know that when that does come, that will feel fun for you. Like being able to make a big deposit into your savings will be something that you're really motivated by. And so we can wait until that larger income is available in order to do that. Now, I know that's not easy to, you know, but I want to move next year. I want to, you know, have these like markers. And so slowing that down can sometimes be a hard thing to accept. But I think the trade-off of that is maybe I could find some ways to enjoy my life in the meantime and have a little bit more flexibility and breathing room. So let's jump into that. If you were to do that and say, I'm going to accept that the big savings and the big goals can come when I'm a teacher and have that full-time salary, what would maybe be some things that would be fun for you and your son to add into your budget, even if they're very small, even if they're like, okay, $20 a month to this, and even if it means a little bit slower of a savings goal or a little bit smaller of a margin, what would be some things that would be really fun for you guys now?
The zoo would be a really cool one. He likes elephants. There's really not much when it comes to me.
But would that be fun for you to be able to go to the zoo with him? Yeah. So did your zoo offer a membership?
Yes, it does.
I mean, a great thing about memberships is that while it's a larger upfront expense, then the two of you can go anytime that you have availability on, you know, evenings, weekends, summer, you know, school breaks, and you don't have to constantly budget for another purchase. And so I'm a huge advocate of memberships because they almost always work out to be much, much, much cheaper in the long run than anything that we would be paying for one at a time. Do you happen to know ballpark, like what a parent and child membership would be at your zoo?
116.
Okay. So I would really recommend right off the bat, I would recommend budgeting for how long it would take to save up that 116 and be able, you know, maybe set a goal that by, you know, middle of June or, you know, when it's nice out and school break is out, you know, all that, that you would be able to buy that membership. And again, the really big benefit of a membership like that is for you as someone who doesn't want to be constantly paying for something because you want to be sending money to your goals. Once you bought that one-time membership, you can kind of go right back to what you had been doing before with the gap that you had between your income and expenses, whether it was putting it in savings or just using it as a buffer. It wouldn't be something that you needed to constantly budget for. It would be something that you could pay for one time, but then enjoy for an entire year. So I would really recommend putting that in, building a plan for whatever it looks like to save up towards that, just so that you can have fun together, so that you can remind yourself that it's okay for things to take time. It's okay for the savings goals that you have in mind to have a little different timeline. It's not, and that's, I think, an important distinction is it's not, I can't do this. It's, I can do this in a little bit of a different time frame, a little bit farther away than what I originally thought. Because sometimes it can feel like if I don't do it right now, then I'm not doing it, right? Like it's a yes or a no. So I'm either saving up for a house or not saving up for a house. When really it can just be that we need to stretch when we're actually going to achieve that goal. So Would it be hard for you to, even if you saved up and had the 116, would it be hard to fork over the money for that because you'd be thinking about other things that it could do?
Yeah, that's kind of like one of my biggest struggles when it comes to the whole thing, even like my emergency fund, like using it. I go like, but what if, what if, what if, what if, what if?
That's very common, first of all. That's very normal to feel that way is when we buy something, what if I change my mind? What if I have buyer's remorse, not because of the actual thing I bought, but because of something else that pops up that I just didn't know about at the time, right? So I would recommend saving up the 116 instead of pulling it from savings would be that your current emergency fund would not change in balance, right? So even if you bought a Zoom membership and had something pop up in the same day, your emergency fund had not taken a hit in order to pay for that Zoom membership. So it wouldn't be like you were further behind than what you had been before. And the other really important thing is I just did a podcast episode the other day with somebody who I had to say the exact same thing to, is that sometimes we can do absolutely everything right and still have something go wrong. So it doesn't mean if, for example, if you bought the Zoom membership and then your car battery died, it doesn't mean that buying the Zoom membership was wrong because you did exactly the right thing with the information you had at the time. And there were just other things that you didn't know. And there's always going to be other things that we don't know ahead of time. So even if that exact scenario happened where the day you bought the Zoom membership, you needed to replace the battery in your car, that would not be an indication that you made a mistake. Like you did not do anything wrong in that scenario. There's always going to be information that we don't all have ahead of time. And so then that emergency fund and that propensity for savings, the fact that you are very prone to save and you're not prone to spend, means that you'll be able to have a contingency plan. You will be able to pivot and come up with what that plan B looks like. So it sounds like a large piece of it is not necessarily for you anything like technical or logistical, like here's how to build the budget and here's how to grow the gap between your income and expenses. It's more the mindset piece of how do I think about the way that I save? How do I think about the way that I spend? So the more we can learn to give ourselves permission to spend and know that we have really good values for saving, like having a desire to save is an excellent priority to have. But there's other things that require us to spend that are just as worthy of being a priority in our lives. So wanting to enjoy time at the zoo with your son while you're in school and while you're waiting for that teacher pay a year from now is a good value. Like that's a good value to have. And there's no reason that it needs to be secondary to the desire to save or the desire to grow the gap between your income and expenses. So from my outside perspective, again, I'm not in your shoes, but I hope that I can share with you that I think waiting is okay and that spending money is also okay. So what are some of the things that you have done in the past to grow that gap between your income and expenses? Because I know you said at one point, I feel like I've cut as much as I can out of the expenses. What are some of those things that you've done to either try to reduce the expenses or to increase the income?
So one of the things that I've done that I know people are going to be like, why are you saying that? Is let go of the fact he's not going to pay. Like, let it go. It's okay. And I know people on both sides will be like, he should be paying me, you know, the whole thing. But truly letting go of control of the fact that he isn't going to was the first step in this process. Because I needed to remind myself that it was on me, regardless of what he did. Waiting for him to send me to not going to fix anything that was going on in my money situation. That was the first thing. The second thing was I cut out everything but Hulu for like 2 years and paid off debt, which is kind of why the subscriptions, the memberships, they all went, all the fun, like went. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And it was a very hard to explain to a child why I was doing those things and having to say no. And then when his dad would appear without the presents for Christmas or he'd be like, why? You know, he would start to notice the difference. I had to let go of that as well. The comparison, the need to compete with him, because that's what he would do. The second thing was I started doing MLMs, which I know are not the greatest, but at the time I was looking for something that wouldn't pull me away from my kid and allow me to like make a little bit of extra money. It wasn't, I'm not going to sit here and tell everyone I made $500 to $1,000, because it's not, but it was at all. And I put everything extra on my credit card, everything extra on my car. And then, well, all that was left in 2022 was the car. So I sat there and I said, you know what? And my tax return came. And I was like, what do I want to do? And I was like, you know what? Let's just get rid of this car. There's $1,000 left. Let's just get rid of the payment so I don't got to deal with it anymore. And it's what I did. I cut everything down to bare bones, decluttered, sold whatever I could. You know, I just kind of went into a stage of like, I don't want to live like this anymore. And just went, like, that's one thing about my personality is that I'm very extreme. So when I do it, I do like everything goes all in, everything goes. That's not necessary. And I don't know if it's necessarily healthy, as my therapist likes to say, that that's necessarily healthy, but it was that. And then fast forward to now. Now that I have the debt gone, all the debt gone, minus my student loans, and I'm making more in the school district switch that I made for my teacher's aid, like I'm making more. I'm kind of sitting here with like a little bit more money than what I'm still sitting with. So I'm like, how do I adjust to that?
So when did you make the switch to the school district that is paying you a little bit more?
September.
September. Okay. So your car was already paid off at that point?
Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of had in a good way, a double whammy of car payment went away and paycheck got a little bit larger.
Yeah.
Okay. So since then, in the last, you know, 5 or 6 months, have you added anything back into the budget that you had previously cut, or had you kept the expenses the same?
So I basically only added like one thing to it. I added HBO Max back to the equation. And that was like all I did, because I was like, there's still these large overarching goals that I want, you know, to like invest for my kiddo, for college fund. Like those things became more of a priority once all the other stuff was gone.
So added one subscription back in. And then just you were able to put more into savings than you had before. Is that kind of where you put the difference?
Yeah.
Okay. So at this point now, you've had a few months of adding more to savings than you had previously done. So the possibility of adding more expenses into the budget is what feels hard, because that feels like you would kind of be going backwards. Is that what you're explaining?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So you have these larger goals and your emergency fund is small right now, but it does cover 1 month of expenses. Are you just focusing on putting money in savings that you're earmarking for? Are you wanting to buy or rent when you move out?
I go back and forth. In New York State, rent is like the same as mortgage. So I'm like, is it really different?
So one thing with that is, and I'm sure you've heard this before, rent is the most you'll pay and mortgage is the least you'll pay per month because of all the additional expenses that come with owning a home. So sometimes, you know, it can be when we hear, okay, the mortgage payment is the same as the rent payment, I might as well buy. We call the rent is the ceiling when we're living somewhere and the mortgage is the floor. So when we have a $2,000 rent, that's the most we'll pay for living there per month. And when we have a $2,000 mortgage, that's the lowest, that's the least that we'll pay per month living there because of all of the maintenance and additional stuff that can come along with that. Additionally, if the monthly payments are the same, it still doesn't account for how much we had to put down in order to buy a home versus how much we had to put down to rent, which is usually just 1 month of rent. So as a current renter, I've done both right now. Like I've owned a home and I'm now back to being a renter. I think an excellent middle transition from where you're at now to what your ultimate goal could be would be to rent first. Because even if you only do that for a year, there's still going to be things about that experience that will help you learn what fits well into your budget, what you like. Sometimes when we move out, for example, we might say, oh, I really want 2 bathrooms, or, you know, there could be something that we're imagining we really want. And then if we get that, we might be like, oh, actually, I changed my mind. You know, something else is more valuable to me, for example, and more yard space instead of an extra bedroom, or whatever the actual details are. So I think renting can be a fantastic way to practice having that larger expense in the budget, see what we like and don't like about where we live, and then continue to work towards deciding if we want to own or not. There's controversy around that, but I'm a huge advocate that there are a million ways to become a wealthy, financially independent, secure person while being a renter. I do not at all think that owning a home is a requirement for wealth building. There's ways to do it that do build your wealth, and there's also ways to own a home that sink your wealth. So I think that moving out and having your own place is a wonderful goal, and I love that for you, and I think that should be a goal. I think renting can be an excellent way to dip your toes into that and see what you really want to do long term, and then you can commit to where you want to buy, what you want that house to look like. So as you're building up to that, you could probably move into a rental much, much sooner than you could buy a home with down payment versus, you know, deposit. And so having, you know, once you have that full-time job and you're done with school, you could probably rent within 6 months of starting to work your full-time job versus needing to put a large down payment on a house, for example. So in the middle of that, with the savings goals that you have and the slightly larger gap between your income and expenses than what you had even, you know, 7 or 8 months ago, have you been putting money in savings, imagining this is going into my emergency fund or this is going towards another place to live in the future?
So it's mostly been going to the emergency fund just because that seemed like the best idea at the time. And then the house savings is like whatever I have left. I've been going in there just because of where my income stands right now.
So do you have a goal amount? Like you said, 500 is what you currently have in your emergency fund. Do you have a goal amount for something that's maybe like a little bit larger than a minimum emergency fund, but maybe not a full emergency fund yet?
Yeah, I was looking at like 3,000 as like that could have seemed like the best number in comparison to the when I see a large number and shut down. So I need that smaller number.
Having milestones of your ultimate goals. So for example, you know, 3,000 would be 6 months of current expenses. And then as you begin teaching, then your income would go a lot higher. And then if you decide to move and take on a rent payment, then 3,000 would probably go back to being more like 1 month of expenses. But at least you know that even if that happened, you're not going to go below like less than a month. You're not going to have less than a month of expenses when you would start renting a house, right? Because that's another big thing too, is whether we rent or we buy, if we're preparing to drastically increase our living expenses, we want to make sure that the emergency fund we have on hand matches those increased expenses, that we're never operating with less than 1 month of expenses in an emergency fund. So I think 3,000 is the perfect goal for building up your current emergency fund from 500 to 3,000, so that whenever you're ready to shift your living expenses and living arrangement, you would have an emergency fund that would feel much more secure and know that even if extra expenses pop up related to your new house, that you would have the ability to go ahead and pay for it without taking on debt. So knowing your current gap between your income and expenses, roughly how long do you think it would take you to get from 500 to 3,000 based on what you're doing per month on average?
So what I'm doing per month is about 250. It will only take me about a year because I'm paid biweekly. So like I've done the math.
Okay, good.
I divided it by the number of paychecks that I have and it would work. Even if I boost it like a little bit, I'll get there faster. But I've been afraid to send anything higher than that because that was roughly my car payment. So I just kind of, and I'm afraid to do anything higher than that because of having a child with special needs and asthma and all the things. Like I'm afraid to pull anything more extra from that.
from your paycheck into your savings or from your savings to use for something?
My paycheck to my savings.
Okay.
Because I always have like a cushion of like $100 just in case of a problem. And the thought of taking anything from that.
Yeah. So I don't see anything wrong with what you're describing. I think having a cushion in your checking is great. I think taking the amount that used to be your car payment and putting it into savings is also great. The fact that you could go from $500 to $3,000 in a year means that you'll already be well and above that goal by the time, by the time you graduate and would be starting a teaching job. So I don't see anything wrong with what you're describing. I don't see anything that you're doing wrong or that you should be doing differently. And one thing, again, I think it's more the mindset than the technical piece of it. I like to remind myself that if I put too much in savings in a pay period and I have to pull a little of it back out, that on the whole, net positive is where my savings account is going. And this is totally personal preference, but I do personally, whatever my budget says is extra, is left over above my budget buffer, I put all of that into savings and I don't let myself dwell on the what ifs, because unlike a car payment, and that might be where some of that rewiring of the way we think about it is, when we put extra payments onto a debt, if something happens later, we can't ask for that back. We can't tell, you know, whoever our car lender is, oh, I actually need that $100 back. We can do that with our own savings accounts. So we can say, oh, my budget says I can put $400 in savings. I'm going to do that. Oh, I actually need $200 of it back for something. That still means that in that pay period, you added $200 to your savings. So I like to tell myself like, oh, I a little bit overshot it. I actually need a little bit of that back. But that's different than withdrawing from savings, because my savings account didn't go down in that pay period. It actually went up. It just didn't go up by as much as I thought I would be able to do. If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. Do you have a few events or trips this summer that could use a special outfit? Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. Just visit armoire.style/debtfreemom to get up to 50% off your first month. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Swap them for more new-to-you styles when you're ready. Within the last week, I wore a hot pink jumpsuit for Mother's Day and a bright blue dress to the symphony, all from Armoire. I can try brighter colors than I normally choose, all without adding clutter to my closet or a high price tag to my budget. It's perfect for women who love to shop but are working on reducing their spending. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/debtfreemom. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/debtfreemom to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. So that's something that you can kind of look at, whether it's having a little graph of what your savings account is and not actually charting it until the end of the pay period. Because I think unlike you, if I see extra, I spend it. I don't have a desire to save it. I have a desire to spend it. So I've learned for myself, if I put as much as I can into savings and then need to pull a little bit back out, I can still tell myself based on that graph that where my balance is going, that your balance is still growing. Even if you end up having to take a small amount of it back out because there was some expense for your son that you didn't know about ahead of time and now you do know about, you're still on the whole growing. You're going in the positive direction. So ending up putting money in savings, like you were explaining, that you're worried about having an unexpected expense come up and needing that money, that is a valid fear when we're putting extra money onto a debt. It's not a valid fear when we're putting it into savings because you maintain full ownership and access to that money. And so I know people have a mental hurdle over withdrawing money from savings. It feels like the wrong thing to do. But when we realize I own that money and I just put it into this corner instead of this corner, and now I'm going to shift it from corner A to corner B, but it's all still my money, we can give ourselves a little more permission to be flexible with what we do with it, whether it's putting it in there at the beginning of the pay period, putting it in at the end. For people who are afraid that they'll need the money back, a lot of times I try to tell them to put half of it right away. Like if their budget says they can put 100 in savings, put 50 of it in savings on like day one of the pay period, and then maybe the other 50 halfway through the pay period or something, so that we can kind of give ourselves some actual lived experience of like, oh, it was okay. And, you know, I put it there and then I was able to add a little bit more to it. So you're moving in all the right directions. You're doing all the right things. I don't hear anything that you're saying that I'm like, oh, I think she should do this differently. It's just the way we think about it and the contentment and patience that we have along the way can be far more challenging than actually finding a gap between our income and expenses. You're moving in such a good direction and you're doing all the right things as you're moving towards that higher income and that bigger goal. That I think just the fact that you're in school and parenting and doing all of the things, that you can give yourself a lot more grace than you might be right now.
Thank you. I also think like a big part of it is like for me, and if anyone's in the situation, like I'm sure they'll hear, like when you don't have the other parent involved, as much as you try, like I tried to part being the greatest decision. That's also like a big piece of it. Like, I don't have that person to turn to and be like, hey, like we need to like figure this out because I'm ignored.
So how does that impact the way that you think about putting money into savings?
I never want my son to be in a situation where he has to ask him for anything.
So the more you can put in savings, the less likely it is that that would happen. So I think that is completely valid. Like that sounds very reasonable to me. The additional component of that, that I think is the, and this is something that regardless of situation, and when we think about money, it can be hard to accept that we have to do two opposite things. We have to be really good at savings and really good at being willing to spend. And those are two things that feel very opposite. Like we feel like, oh, everybody is either a spender or a saver. And that's something that Morgan Housel talks about in the book, The Psychology of Money. He calls it the barbell, the money barbell, that we have to be really good at putting money into savings and really good at being willing to spend it when we need to. And if I hear, you know, what you're saying, being willing to do both of those things, they both help your son. They both help him have a financial security, like being able to save is what you have down. Like you have that down pat. You know how to do that. You're good at that. Being willing to spend also helps him. So putting money into savings is adding to that level of security for both him and for you as you're being financially independent. But having the ability to decide to spend the money out of savings in order for something that is a priority is also helping him. So you don't need to heap guilt upon yourself if not enough went into savings or that you needed to buy something. Buying something for him is as good of a gift to him, whatever that is, whether it's socks or medicine or a toy, whatever it is as helpful in his own, you know, breaking his own financial cycles that you want him to not experience as it is to save. They're both healthy things. And I know that, you know, you probably know that. It's just having to talk through and work through, like when the rubber meets the road, when the thing actually needs to be bought, what's the internal story that we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever find yourself feeling, even if something is a very valid and necessary expense, do you ever find yourself thinking like, I wish I didn't have to buy this, or do I really need to buy this, and really holding back on pulling the trigger on purchasing something, even if it is necessary, because holding on to that cash feels better? Is that where you're at?
Yeah.
So do you have any ideas of what would make you feel better about doing that? Is just the simple fact of growing your emergency fund larger? Do you think that over time that would make you feel more willing to spend if you knew that the amount sitting in your emergency fund was even higher than it is now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is another great reason to work towards building that emergency fund, is that, you know, the more I have in there, the more breathing room I'll feel, that I can go ahead and make that unexpected $20 purchase because the emergency fund has $1,000 in it instead of $500, you know? And the good thing about that is that that feeling, that more flexibility, ability to breathe more, can come all along the way. It's not like wherever you are now, you're only going to feel the benefits of that once you get to 3,000. You can feel the benefits of that increasing level of flexibility and stability all along the way as you're building your savings. The tricky part is balancing when to save and when to spend. Again, you're doing a great job. These things just take time. And like you said, especially for someone who is a single parent and not receiving child support, the fact that it takes time is not any indication on your abilities, on your skills. It's just a function of the situation that you're in. And so there's not something that you're doing wrong because it's taking time. It doesn't make that any easier to absorb and accept when you're in the middle of the situation, but it does give a valid reason that has nothing to do with your skill, your worth, your abilities, your earning potential, how well you do at your job, how well you are parenting your son. It has no indication of your value in any of those areas. The nature of it taking time is simply a nature of your circumstance. And that's okay. Like, that's not, again, not anything that you are doing wrong. And so as you are spending the next year and a half, you know, saving and building up that savings, because that is going to help you and your son, what are some practical things that, even if they would be a little bit challenging for you to go ahead and buy, that would be like maybe a small exercise in like practicing that muscle of buying something, just to tell yourself buying things is good, just like saving is good?
The membership will definitely be one. I need to start doing something for me. I don't do enough because my primary focus has always been him. I definitely need to add something for myself in this money thing.
Does your current budget have personal spending cash at all for you? Zero?
I cut it all out.
Okay. So I want you to add it back in, and I want you to do that sooner rather than later. And this is something I say in custom budgets all the time. The amount matters so much less than just the function of having it there. Just the idea of it being there and it being a line item in your budget is so much more important than what amount it is. I don't care if it's $10 per pay period. That's still going to increase your ability to spend for yourself if it's there ahead of time. And because you're not going to spend for yourself if you have to remove something else out of the budget during the pay period, right? Like if you're like, oh, I would really like to get myself coffee on the way to work or whatever, but I would have to subtract $6 from some other category, that's going to make you not want to do it. But if you think the thought, oh, I would like to grab myself coffee on the way to work today, if that's something you like, for example, what would it need to be in your budget so that that was something you were able to do every Monday? It would be like $10 per pay period, right? So it's going to be something that is functionally very small, percentage-wise very small. But the fact that you get to a Monday and you're like, oh yeah, that's already in the budget. That's what it's there for. It's meant to be spent on my drink for the week or whatever. Then even if like it's not spending any more than if you had subtracted something out of some other category, just the fact that it was already there and it was earmarked for that specific expense can make it easier for ourselves to say, okay, I can spend that money because that's what it's in the budget for. So again, the amount of it matters very little. So if you're like, I don't want it to be a big amount because I don't want to take away from my savings, like I said, like $10 per pay period is something that most of us could do something with, whatever treat we, you know, that little treat that we like to get, whether it's picking up a soda or picking up a cookie or, you know, whatever it is. And just as you do that, just know that the act of doing that, again, is on the whole benefiting your son, because it's having a mom who understands that spending on herself is a good thing. And it's also teaching him, like, you would never want him to build a budget for himself where he didn't buy anything for himself, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So we model the things with our money that we want our kids to do. So if you knew that he was an adult working a full-time job and he came to you and said, Mom, I don't want to spend any of my money on myself, you would say, oh, you need to put a little bit of it towards, you know, like what's something fun that you would like to do? And so if we would say that to our kids, we need to say that to ourselves, not just because we are worthy of that, just like they are, but also because whatever he sees you doing as he grows up is going to be what he does once he is working and building a budget as well. So having that for yourself is a good thing.
I learned from the two adults.
So modeled, and yeah, we get that example, and then that's what we do. And so that means that you're kind of in a, for lots of reasons, you are a cycle breaker, right? Like you're taking things that happened both in your childhood and in your past relationships and saying, okay, I know that I want it to be different for me and my son. What are the things I need to do? And while it feels like saving every single penny is what you need to do in order to break that, I think you also need to spend some on yourself in order to break that. So again, I want you to get off this call and I want you to go into your little spreadsheet and find what part of the budget on each pay period goes to Alexandria, and I want you to buy something for yourself. That's your homework.
Well, next pay period is next Friday, so...
There you go. So you have a little bit of time to play around with the numbers, to seesaw those things around and decide what do you want it to be. And I think it will help you to not just make it be personal spending cash, but think about and maybe even jot down on a post-it note or in your spreadsheet, like what would the actual purchase be that would be fun for you and fit into the budget that you have? Like, do you have off the top of your head that it would just be like such a treat if I could buy, like I said, like this thing every Monday? Do you have something like that off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. So I want you to think about between now and next Friday to not only build that amount into your budget, but to also think about what would the thing be that fits into the budget of whatever you decide to add into your budget and would feel genuinely joyful, that would feel like this is something I'm not used to doing for myself and I can fully embrace how big of a treat that is for me. And so you have a little bit of time, think about what that is. You'll probably change your mind a few times, decide that it's a new nail polish color. No, actually, I'm going to get myself lunch on Tuesday, whatever it is. And I think that's the cool thing about personal spending cash too, is it can be different each time. So maybe next pay period, you decide that it's some, I don't know, skincare product or something. And then the following pay period, you're like, oh, that was a really rough day. I'm going to order pizza for the two of us or whatever it is. But having that there and just saying that it's your personal spending cash, and then you can decide what it's going to look like each time, can be a token of moving towards a willingness to save, and that barbell, the willingness to save and the willingness to spend. And that both of those things that feel opposite are both very healthy. Well, Alexandria, this has been a wonderful conversation. I have enjoyed it greatly because a lot of times I'm talking to people who are very much the opposite, where I have to be like, let's dial back the spending. Let's think about some of our long-term goals. And you are the opposite. I'm like, she's got the long-term goals down. She's got the savings and the discipline down. Let's talk about having a little bit of fun. So that was a very fun conversation for me. So again, your homework is to spend on yourself. I'm going to check up on you. I know that you're in the community. I can find you. Is there anything else that you want to ask or that you want to say to maybe another single parent that's out listening and is not as far along in their financial journey as you are?
Kind of two things in that regard. I know that it's not easy to be in this situation. And to anyone that may kind of feel like I did, like, why can't I get him to do it? You have to remember that your child's going to be old enough to figure this out for himself. The need to defend him, the need to protect him, the need to save your child's father from the truth. I spent 5 years doing that. It doesn't make you the bad guy for saying that this is reality of the situation. And the second thing is that it does get easier financially. It's just figuring out what works for you.
Awesome. That's amazing. Thanks for being willing to share that and being so open about something that can be really hard to talk about.
Yeah, it is not easy. But you learn.
One of my favorite authors calls it the good hard life. Like she had a massive stroke right after having a baby, and she's now permanently in a wheelchair and stuff. And she calls it the good hard life, that things can be very hard and good at the same time. Those don't have to be opposites.
Welcome back to another segment of Not Worth Your Money, where Carly and I will talk about whether something is worth it or not to pay for. So I think, Carly, you have one today.
Yeah. So I have one that we have never paid for, and I'm curious to know if you would do it or not. So for anybody watching consistently on Instagram, they know that Kyle is job hunting right now. And so my question to you is, I know you haven't actually done this, but do you think that something like a job recruiter, resume reviewer, that kind of service could be worth the money?
Yes, I do. And I'm actually like really close to just going for it with one of them. Yeah, I know somebody recommended, they have a career coach, I believe is the official title. But this person who recommended it said that they've really helped in not only reviewing your resume and maybe even pointing you at some jobs or something that you weren't aware of, but also kind of coaching you through what you would be good at based on your skills and your experience and your interests. It's just maybe considering some different fields or different positions that might not be front of mind. So I haven't yet emailed them, but that's on my to-do list for the next couple of days.
Yeah. So that's what I was curious about, because posting about asking other people what their job hunting experience has been across the board, first of all, it's been highly frustrating for a lot of people. And interestingly, both employers and employees. So maybe not an employer, but someone who works in recruiting and onboarding and hiring is also saying that their job is frustrating, that they are experiencing difficulty filling the positions that they are supposed to fill as part of their job. But then on the flip side, people looking for jobs also expressing a very high degree of frustration. And a lot of it came into that question box was like, I looked for months and months and months and finally found something because of a recruiter. Or I looked for months and months and months and finally did a resume review or something like that. So I think, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, because of the value that you get out of it, it's the job market is in such a position where you can't just shoot out a couple resumes and you're getting interviews right away. Like across the board, that's not happening for really anyone. The few people who said, interviewed to two jobs and got one right away, I asked what they do, and every single one of them was a nurse. and so I was like, well, that's just kind of a different field where it's like always needed, high need, transferable skills. You can go anywhere, you know, like just, it was funny. And so even like, okay, another interesting one is teachers. Some people were saying that they are having trouble getting a teaching job, and teaching is like shortage crisis, like
everywhere,
mass exodus of current teachers creating openings. They're also saying that not enough people are choosing to major in teaching to fulfill the pipeline of, like, you know, 3 to 4 years from now, having enough teachers, enough new teachers. So it was really interesting to see a few teachers said they could get it, but then a few of them were saying they were very surprised at the very least, at how dragged out and how much friction there was in the process, considering. So yeah, that was my question to you that I have not asked you personally before, is as I was scanning through those answers and people were saying they didn't find success in finding a job until they worked with a recruiter, I was just curious if that would be something on your mind or if you would prefer to do it.
I mean, I prefer to do it independently. I think I would probably venture a guess that most people would say like, oh, I know what I've done. I know my experience. Mm-hmm. I can tell other people what that is and find something. But what I think I knew intellectually, but through my experience, I'm now like living out, is that the skills that you need to do a job are very different from the skills that you need to get a job. Mm-hmm. And even though I feel very confident in my abilities to, you know, do the specific tasks of the job that I'm applying for, there's clearly a mismatch between what I feel like I'm capable of, what I know that I'm capable of, and being able to communicate that in a way that resonates with the people who actually are hired for the job.
You have to know how to get yourself to stand out in a way that you actually have a chance to demonstrate that. And that's, like you said, a totally different set of skills. I know even like some people were saying that in the process of interviewing and all those kind of things, they're kind of going back to like the more old school ways of getting a job, like mailing a physical resume and cover letter to someone so that they get like their inbox on their computer or their CRM might have 800 applications, trying to make something rise to the top. And then they get a physical envelope with a resume and a letter, and they're much more likely to call that person back or whatever. So it's just interesting. It's come full circle technologically, and now you have to be in person to get that, you know, kind of thing. The other thing is someone who does hiring said that the first thing they do to filter out is only look at people who have referrals from someone in the company. Because even if there is a phenomenal candidate in that list, they don't have the manpower to give all 600 of the applications an equal, you know, equal glance or whatever. And so they're just looking for which one came to them because so-and-so in accounting said this person would be a good match.
Yeah.
And so she said that that's what her job is. And that out of the hundreds of applications, what they did was just narrow it down to the 25 that got sent to them by referral.
Mm-hmm.
So matters who you know. And in like, being frustrated with finding a job when it matters who you know, a recruiter could be one of those. Like, it might not be someone in your network of like, oh, this guy is my friend and his cousin has this. It could be hiring a recruiter and that becomes your connection.
Totally.
So I was just curious to see if that would be a next step that you would be willing to take, or because it's an expense or because you have to kind of be vulnerable and expose yourself to someone else evaluating you, if it would be a bigger hesitation.
Well, when you put it that way, I'm definitely not doing it. So yeah, I guess we'll keep you posted on whether or not I actually think this is worth the money.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Until next week, this is the Debt-Free Mom Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.